Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the Wes Anderson directed Grand Budapest Hotel. Brother Jay, this is your pick.
It is.
Are you a big Wes Anderson fan?
Well, I got a text from you last night, and I was like, you know, I don't think I could identify a Wes Anderson film.
He wrote and directed, co-wrote with Owen Wilson, Bottle Rocket.
Never seen it.
He directed Rushmore and wrote that. The Royal Tenenbaums.
I love The Royal Tenenbaums.
The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
That was hilarious. It's Bill Murray, right?
Yeah.
Love that.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I love that.
Darjeeling Limited.
I haven't seen that.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Haven't seen that.
Isle of Dogs.
I haven't seen it. We have it on Blu-ray, and boyfriend Jesse has been, no pun intended, hounding me to watch it. So
it sounds like you're a fan of some of Wes Anderson's movies.
I would say yes.
Yeah, you actually haven't, nothing on the list you've seen you didn't like.
That is correct.
He definitely seems to have a theme.
Yeah. Cause now that I know those are all the, cause I would have said this film was a lot like Royal Tenenbaums. Because of the way the flow of the movie goes and the way it's chapterized and segmented. So. It's very formulaic, and so that doesn't surprise me. But I thought it worked.
You don't say.
Still with Brother Jay. Hold on, Drew. You're next. So how did you discover this movie, and how did you feel watching it for this broadcast?
The first time I watched it was when I was in Alaska last summer, when boyfriend Jesse and I came up to visit for the summer, and I had it on the laptop. And we watched it one night in bed because it was like, oh, we wanted to watch a movie. And we'd actually watched Red Dawn first.
The original?
Original.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
It's a little rough, Red Dawn, by the way. It's a little rough to watch. But
it still retains its essential Red Dawn-ness. It's kind of low budget, but it's just 80s.
It's full of the sways, and that's really the only reason to watch it. So we watched Red Dawn, and that wasn't quite the desired effect for the evening because my friend Jesse was like, yeah. And then I'm like, well, let's watch something a little more uplifting. So we watched the Grand Budapest Hotel, and we both really liked it. And I thought it was pretty funny and witty and charming, and it had lots of interesting choices for actors and settings and tone, had a good pace and kept my interest. So
Brother Drew, when did you first see this movie?
This past week.
And what did you think about it?
I hated it.
And what's your relationship with cousin Wes?
Troubled.
Okay. You care to elaborate?
I saw Bottle Rocket on video and I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was creative. Same with Rushmore. I saw that and thought it was kind of funny, a little annoying. Royal Tenenbaums, I thought, was super indulgent and annoying. So I had no interest in watching Life Aquatic or Darjeeling Limited, but I liked The Fantastic Mr. Fox. I watched that and liked it quite a bit. I really like that movie, but have not seen anything else by Wes Anderson. In fact, going into this movie, I did not understand it was a Wes Anderson movie. I actually, in my head, I had confused it with The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Oops.
I was really curious about why Jason was so excited to like watch a movie about a bunch of old people.
Hey now, wait a second. I'm not opposed to movies with lots of old people.
I wasn't opposed to it either. I had heard it was good and was looking forward to watching it, and then it turned out it was this.
And so you're saying you didn't have a good time?
No. Nah.
At what point did the wheels come off the wagon?
When I saw Jason Schwartzman's stupid hair.
Okay.
That's the point. I was like, I'm out. I'm like, fuck this guy. I'm done.
So we're talking about like maybe 2 minutes into the movie?
It was a good 4.5.
Okay.
We had to sit through the just useless beginning story that set up the story within the story that was the avenue to get to the real story that was the story within the story within the story.
Which was a fable.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, so for me, the first time I saw this movie was 2 nights ago. And, okay, so I have not seen Bottle Rocket or Rushmore or Life Aquatic or Darjeeling or Moonrise Kingdom or Isle of Dogs. Nor do I want to, probably because I'm not a Bill Murray fan. However, I really liked The Royal Tenenbaums. I thought The Fantastic Mr. Fox was fine. I didn't love it. I think I like this movie. This movie has lots of things that I like. But I had to go to the dictionary. I had to try to parse out where the line is between whimsical and twee. Because this was twee.
I don't even know those distinctions. Will you enlighten us, please?
I think mostly it's whimsy is something that's thought to be positive, and twee is a negative, has a negative connotation of the same thing. It's like emphasis on the quaint. I don't know. Do you have a different definition handy? Is there a machine of whimsy or twee? Because actually, I will link to a an IFC article called Every Wes Anderson Movie Ranked in Order of Tweeness. If this movie didn't have the violence in it, it would have been the most twee. But because of the violence, it brought it down a notch.
Whimsy is capricious humor or disposition, extravagant, fanciful, or excessively playful expression. An odd or fanciful notion. Anything odd or fanciful, a product of playful or capricious fancy.
So what is twee?
Affected, dainty, or quaint. Twee writing about furry little creatures. It's a chiefly British expression, it says.
But and it's negative. It's not a positive thing.
Yeah. See, also really fucking annoying.
It's a mood thing. I mean, I can see whimsy. I understand. Like, if you watch a movie, like some of the Coen Brothers movies.
Those are the ones I don't like.
I'm sensing this is Drew's Tropic Thunder.
Some of the Paul Thomas Anderson movies, although not whimsical necessarily, but, you know, sort of fantastic storytelling, like Magnolia. Magnolia is not twee.
Magnolia is dark.
It's dark. Well, this movie has elements of darkness.
Yeah, it has some dark spots.
And in fact, the end of this movie is super dark in a very offhanded way. Because it's not about the darkness. The movie is about the light. Or is it? So, shall we just dive in?
Yes.
There's a lot of... The plot synopsis is long. So we'll see how much we get through of it before we skip around.
There's a lot of moving parts in this movie.
Yeah. And again, it's told, as Drew correctly pointed out, it's a story within a story within a story with a tangent. Back to the story with another tangent. Back to the story. And then it has to close all those loops at the end.
It's like one of our podcasts.
A little bit, but we don't know. It's one of those, like, what is it called? Matryoshka dolls or whatever.
The Matryoshka dolls?
Matryoshka. There you go.
The nesting, Russian nesting dolls. I just was amazed. Another Tom Wilkinson flick.
It was great.
And Tilda Swinton.
And Saoirse Ronan.
Nicely done with the pronunciation.
Oh, I practiced. Probably still got it wrong.
Saoirse? No, I think it was pretty good. Have either of you seen Paddington 2?
No. I haven't seen Paddington 1.
I've heard that Paddington 2 is the best children's movie of last year. Maybe this year. I don't remember.
It doesn't have some insensitive food allergy thing.
No, that was Peter Rabbit.
Peter Rabbit. Yeah.
I have not seen
Paddington 2, I think, was the good version of this movie.
It captures the appropriate amount of whimsy.
Yes.
Without being twee?
Yeah, and a much better prison sequence.
Okay.
Never thought I'd hear that from a kid's movie.
This had less marmalade in it, though.
Indeed. But more perfume.
Also, less Hugh Grant. Yeah. And more Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, I think that's a net loss.
And Harvey Keitel.
Well, that's the thing. This is like stunt casting. Well, yeah, casting by Wes Anderson and Quentin Tarantino. Like, if Sam Jackson had showed up,
he would not have been out of place.
And let me apologize to Liam and all of the Neesons for a podcast you're going to hear a couple weeks ago. When you finally listen to this, by the time this drops, my tirade about Liam Neeson not being able to speak English correctly, I apologize to because there's a different direction you can take. The direction you can take is the Wes Anderson direction, where you don't make anybody put on false accents, like in this movie.
Why is that a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing, but it comes to a point where if someone's dressed up like as a Nazi commander. Now, granted, they're not really Nazis, right? They're the ZZ Party or whatever. But
well, that's because they couldn't get away with having them be Nazis and get the film out in some countries, especially Germany.
Yeah. Ed Norton. Maybe it's because I'm not a big Ed Norton fan. Good actor. Don't really like him.
Did you think his acting was good in this movie?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, I think it was stunt casting. There were lots of that in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay, so let's unravel this onion. Let's pull back the petals on this beautiful, beautiful rose. A young woman walks into a cemetery in the Republic of Zubrova. I don't know what it's called. It's some sort of Z Republic that's supposed to be Eastern European of some kind. A place that has fallen on hard times. She passes a bench with three men singing and then approaches a memorial with several hotel keys attached to it, dedicated to a man only known as Author. The woman puts a key in the memorial and out takes a book titled The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Is there any relevance to this?
It's to put a pretty frame on the picture, that's all. Twee.
It's not even a frame, it's like half a border.
Well, except the movie ends with it.
Yeah, it's all the way around. So, Flash 2, 1985.
Did you turn it off before then?
I may have checked out.
I have two more paragraphs before we get to Jason Schwartzman. So we have, we meet the author, Tom Wilkinson, in his home as his grandson is running around firing a toy gun in a stupid way, but you're right. So Tom Wilkinson is telling this story about this time at the Grand Budapest Hotel. And then we flash to 1968. And then we have the author, who's now played by Jude Law, who travels to Zubrowka, and which is has been devastated by the war. He goes up to the Grand Budapest Hotel, which is once well-renowned, and sees very few guests, apart from the author and several unnamed patrons. One day, while chatting with the concierge, Monsieur Jean, Jason Schwartzman of Bad Hair, they happen to see an old man, F. Murray Abraham. who, by the way, I like F. Murray Abraham. I think he's great. Yeah. Sitting in the lobby by himself, looking sad and lonely. When the author asks who he is, Monsieur Jean informs him that the old man is Zero Mustafa, the owner of the hotel. It's widely known that Mr. Mustafa has procured many other fine lodgings throughout the world, but Jean surprises the author when he explains that in the Grand Budapest Hotel, he occupies a small servant's quarters. Then we have a scene of whimsy with a choking man. And Zero and the author meet up again sort of by accident at the hotel bath. And Zero invites the author to dinner, where he tells a story. This is what, fourth layer? Maybe fifth layer? Anyway, so the story starts off with part one. Monsieur Gustave. We see Zero, who's now played by Tony Revolori, who is great, by the way. I thought young Zero was pretty great. What did you guys think?
I thought so. He was really selling it.
He was great in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Is he the Flash?
Yes.
Ah.
Just Flash.
Oh, he's not the Flash. He's just a guy named Flash?
Yes. Ah, Flash okay. Thompson.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen that movie?
I have not. Is it good?
Yeah, that's good.
I may not be a comic book movie fan.
That's fair.
Maybe I'll go back. It's just like I'm not a Star Wars fan anymore. Just holds no interest. Anyway, so Zero is a, at this point, is a lobby boy, as is put on his hat.
He's a brand new lobby boy.
Brand new, yes. So new that the chief concierge, legendary concierge, Monsieur Gustave H., played by Ralph Fiennes, Zero is actually assisting other hotel members preparing the meal for Gustave, and an elderly woman known as Madame D., played by Tilda Swinton. Another Tilda Swinton movie where she gets to wear a lot of ugly makeup.
Yeah, she was, I didn't recognize her. She was unrecognizable.
Yeah, I'm telling you, she likes that.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, at least she didn't kill Tom Wilkinson in this movie.
Well, to be fair, she didn't kill him in the other movie. She had him killed, so.
So, during the meal, the old woman tells how she is frightened to leave the hotel, afraid she'll never see Gustav again. Gustav assures her that nothing's going to happen, and before she pulls away, she requests that the concierge light a candle for her. This is when Gustav and Zero are formally introduced, and it's a kind of a fun scene about whether or not to send Zero off to light the candle or not. We get to know a little bit more about how Gustav is very good at his job, and concierging is a very interesting profession.
He takes himself very seriously.
As do others.
Yes.
And nobody really knows who owns the Grand Budapest. Basically, the only emissary for the owner is a Deputy Kovacs, played by Jeff Goldblum. Not putting on an accent, but putting on F. Murray Abraham makeup. So he goes and checks up on the business. And this is Zero also learns that Gustav provides all sorts of things to his customers, because that's what concierges do, including sleeping with all the elderly women. Oh, all the elderly blonde women. Full of insecurities that he can, he's good at that. And then this is, Zero then meets the love of his life, Agatha, played by Saoirse Ronan, a baker with a distinctive birthmark on her cheek, birthmark of the country of Mexico. And she works at Mendel's, Gustav's favorite pastry shop. Then, part two. Madame CVD UT. So Zero goes and gets a newspaper and sees that Madame D has been found dead in her bathroom. And so he takes it to Gustav, and Gustav is shocked. So they immediately get on a train and go to her estate. And on their way to her estate, they're stopped by a field on the day that Sonya is closing the frontier because things are bad.
Is the inference here that Gustav forms relationships, sexual relationships with all these old ladies in the hopes that when they die that they will leave him part of their fortune?
Like, yes.
Is that a retirement strategy of his?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yep.
Yep, that's part of his long game. Also, he gives the best service. but sure. Anyway, so they get stopped by soldiers, and the soldiers come in and ask for papers, and Gustav shows him his papers, and Zero doesn't have any because he's an immigrant. And so the soldier is actually going to take Zero out of the train, which when we're dealing with Nazis is always a bad thing. So this is actually a like legitimate moment of peril in the movie. And Gustav tries to smooth it over, isn't successful. And then fisticuffs ensue where everybody gets punched. But then Inspector Henkels shows up and he recognizes Gustav. Inspector Henkels is Edward Norton. So he gives them sort of a, what is it, a letter of passage?
Well, he gives Zero a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yes.
Because Gustav doesn't need one.
But also tells him to get out of the country, because things are not going to be good. So then Gustav and Zero arrive at the home of Madame D, her mansion. And her maid guides them, played by Leah Seydoux. Who's actually, was she in Blue is the Warmest Color?
I believe so.
Okay. She guides Gustav to the casket, where Gustav has a nice little conversation with Madame D.
She looks better than when she was alive.
He is going to actually romance her, like romance her corpse.
Well.
So the maid tells Gustav that the butler, Monsieur Serge X, wants to speak to him, but Turge is frantic and quickly rushes off. And Gustav and Zero...
Did you recognize Serge X?
No, he's...
He was the bad guy in Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, he was the Bond villain.
Okay, there we go. So they end up in... at chasing after Serge X, they end up in the trophy room where the getting ready for reading of the will being read by Jeff Goldblum. And we see all these relatives of Madame D, including Dimitri, Adrian Brody. Now, if Jason Schwartzman had ridiculous hair, what about Adrian Brody? Didn't he have ridiculous hair too?
Yes.
Yeah. How about Willem Dafoe?
A Wes Anderson staple.
So bitter.
I really felt the same way about this movie that I feel like a lot of later Tim Burton movies. I was just like, yeah, this fucking guy. Get a new shtick.
His old shtick makes lots of money for him.
How I feel about certain Stanley Kubrick movies. I see what you're trying to do there. Isn't that sad? Although some people's shtick works most of the time. Like Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
His was the same shtick, but it worked because he was so good at it. Anyway, back to the family of Madame D. Adrian Brody is a full-on psycho, and it is shocking to find out that the madam has given various and sundry pieces of whatever to her relatives, but she gives a very famous painting, Boy with Apple, to Monsieur Gustav, which Dimitri does not approve of. By the way, Boy with Apple is a ridiculous painting.
Yes.
I think it's on purpose. But you know the painting that when they... Because shortly, Zero and Gustav are going to steal the painting. And they replace it with a painting entitled Two Prostitutes Masturbating. And that piece actually won an award... At an art show where people try to make paintings that would be used in the background in Wes Anderson movies.
Are you kidding?
I am not kidding.
That's not a real story.
No, that's what it's purported to be.
I call shenanigans.
Okay. You don't think there's such an art show?
No.
You don't think Wes Anderson could have just created that just to fuck with people?
Yeah. I do not want to live in a world where there is such an art show.
Check the notes, people. If I find the art show, it'll be in the notes. But we also have Dimitri's right-hand man, J.G. Jopling, played by Willem Dafoe, who, by the way, say what you will about Willem Dafoe, a very odd man, and he has the worst haircut ever, and yet, if I could pull it off, I would wear his wardrobe from leather jacket to skull rings 24/7, 365.
He had quite the outfit and ensemble.
It was great. I loved it. I want nothing else. Now, it would not look the same on someone with my proportions.
I didn't mind Adrien Brody in this movie so much because he was used sparingly. But Willem Dafoe, at first, I had the same reaction you did. I was like, oh, okay, this guy seems interesting. But then he turns out he's in so much of the movie. I was just like, ah, I'm over it. It's too much.
While this whole melee erupts, they steal the painting. Serge comes and tucks an envelope into the back of the painting that says confidential. And they sneak it out. And Gustav makes a pact with Zero saying this is going to be their retirement. And Zero will be given 1.5% of the cut. And Gustav will make him his sole heir. So once back in the hotel, they hide the painting in the vault. And then Hinkle arrives to arrest Gustav as a suspect.
Wait, did we know that was in the note? Or we didn't find that out until like towards the end of the movie, right?
Well, we knew there was a note in the painting.
Yeah. But we didn't know what the note said until the confessional.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you asked me, I couldn't tell you what the note said right now, even though I have notes. Although I suspect it was an important plot point.
It was the second copy of the second will.
Ah, yes. Okay. So,
that does not sound legally binding.
Remember, this is a whimsical fantasy. A fable.
Yeah, I gathered that.
So, when they arrive at the hotel, they lock up the painting just before Hinkles arrives to arrest Gustav, not for stealing the painting, but for the murder of Madame D. So, as Zero watches, Gustav attempts to run, which I thought was a kind of a funny little nod. He was not going to go gracefully into prison. He was going to make a run for it, unsuccessfully.
Everybody runs.
Yeah, that's true. So, then we go part three. Checkpoint 19 at the criminal internment camp. So, Gustav is in prison, and 1 week before his trial, Zero visits him and is shocked to find he's injured. But he explains that he had to prove himself to the others once they question his virility. People are always claiming that Gustav is some sort of homosexual. So, but we know he's quite the ladies' man.
The old ladies' man.
Yeah, well. So Zero also meets with Kovacs, who explains that a deposition given by several family members that Gustav had secretly entered the mansion and poisoned her. But the one who claimed to have seen the events unfold, Serge, has gone missing. And Gustav is pretty sure that Madame's family forced Serge to bear false witness, although he has an alibi as to where he was at the time, he also fears bringing the woman to whose company he was in, the Duchess of Westphalia, into events as it will ruin her reputation. This seems very dangerous liaisons. In the meantime, Dimitri has been looking for Serge himself, sending Joplin to go check on Serge's sister. And so Zero ends up acting as the middleman for Gustav's correspondence with the staff of the Grand Budapest, reading from the concierge's letters and his own prose poems. I bet you love those poems, Drew.
Yeah, they're great.
So Gustav also says that any issues should be addressed by Zero in his absence. Then, back in prison, Gustav has almost become a concierge to the inmates, and he also shares the Mendel's pastries he receives with several inmates, including Ludwig, played by Harvey Keitel, who I thought was Alan Arkin.
His muscle contractions were so distracting.
And obviously on purpose. Everything in this movie was on purpose. Even his janky prison tattoos were on purpose.
Yes.
But half Eastern Promises and half Scooby-Doo.
But Gustav was serving mush with whimsy.
Yes, he was.
Of course he was.
Not only that, there's a prison break with whimsy. And death.
Yeah, that was a little surprising. I had forgotten that part.
There was actually quite a bit of death and violence in this movie. Some on screen and a lot off screen. So we find out that they are smuggling escape tools into prison in the Mendel's boxes. And Zero and Agatha have to work together to make this happen. And Agatha or Zero has fallen in love with Agatha. Actually, it's something mutual. And we have we go back to old Zero remembering Agatha and getting a little weepy and then going back to the story. So we have this whimsical escape plan from the prison camp. And let's see.
Oh my God, this movie was so boring.
Well, then Dimitri and his relatives go and meet Kovacs and threaten him and throw his cat out the window.
Yeah, it's a little jarring.
And then they left it for him in the coat check?
Yeah. Well, somebody yes. scooped it up into a bag.
Yes. Also, during this whole thing, Zero tells Agatha about Boy with Apple, and Agatha is not impressed.
No, she's actually quite appalled.
Yeah. Because she didn't expect Zero to be a thief, a dirty, dirty thief. Anyway, we had the prison break. Oh, yeah, they killed, presumably Joplin killed Mr. Kovacs. Oh, yeah, because he killed him and cut his fingers off first.
Yeah, he got kiss, bang, banged first.
Yeah, this was, again, this is a pretty bloody thing for this whimsical movie.
Actually, it wasn't very bloody. It was a little gruesome.
Well, okay.
There was no blood at all.
There's blood in the prison escape.
Yes.
And then we meet the Society of the Crossed Keys. Now, I will tell you, as somebody who worked in the hospitality industry, not as a concierge, but I witnessed conciergery, that there is a Society of the Crossed Keys. Crossed keys are a thing. That is an emblem you wear on your concierge uniform. I think you really do have to be a member.
Huh.
Yeah. Concierging is serious business. And it could be lucrative, too. It's like the head of the Bellman gang. And Bellman make a lot of money, too, usually.
Good to know.
At least in Anchorage, Alaska, Bellman was the place to make money in the hotel. If you weren't an executive, you were a Bellman or you were a banquet caterer. Because guaranteed tips and a shit ton of cruise line passengers that were guaranteed meals. So whether they ate or not, you got tips every day. But anyway, so then we meet this whole secret underground group of concierges. And here's where, if you thought there was stunt casting before, here's where we double down on the stunt casting. Because we get the fantastic Bob Balaban. We get Bill Murray. We get Fisher Stevens. And then we have two people who I don't recognize but are Eastern European names, but I'm sure they're stunt casting in some way.
And eventually you get the not really affiliated Owen Wilson.
Yes, yes. And again, that's how Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson are friends from long way ago, which is why, by the way, Luke Wilson is in a ton of Wes Anderson movies.
Weren't they both in Bottle Rocket?
Yeah.
Like his first movie?
Yep, this is all University of Texas. So, the Society of the Crossed Keys rescue Gustav and provide him the underground information about where Serge is hiding. And so we end up going to this place where Serge is, and then there's a chase down the mountain and skis in a sled. And then, and of course, we're on the run from Henkel. Let's see.
Well, they're chasing Henkel.
Who's chasing Serge?
Yes. So we have a dramatic rescue where Zero rescues Gustav and pushes Joplin to his death. And then we have part 5, the second copy of the second will. And this is where war comes to the hotel itself, with numerous members of the military taking over the many rooms. And this is where we meet, in the absence of Gustav and Zero, concierge duties have now fallen to a man named Monsieur Chuck, Owen Wilson. Which, okay, you have to enjoy Monsieur Chuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not a big Owen Wilson fan.
No, but turns out Owen Wilson has, okay, I just watched 2 Night at the Museum movies in a row.
Why?
Because it turns out they're kind of fun. Robin Williams makes me a little sad to watch, but Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson when they're yucking it up, it's actually pretty great.
That sounds like the seventh circle of hell.
No, trust me.
Were you watching these on your own, or were you watching these with a child?
With a grandma and a child. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And grandma sat through it?
Well, no, we loved it. In fact, the child got tangent time. We're only in the middle of part five, so hold on. We had tangent time. So
I think it's a record. We went 45 minutes without a tangent.
No, we had some. But Journey got a little bored and wanted to go outside and play because it was a beautiful day. And it's hard, especially at Grandma's house, for Grandma to say, no, you must stay inside and watch the movie because we're not done with it. Although I was perfectly happy to. And we had to leave early anyway because Grandma had to meet Grandpa at the at some sort of meeting. And so I'm staying inside. I'm turning on the news. I may be even pouting a little bit. Because I had to stop the movie.
Which you were enjoying.
Go ahead. That's fine. You know, whatever. You got like a half an hour. Go do what you want. Whatever. So Grandma and Journey go outside. And I hear the sounds of a child playing, which is, of course, music to my ears. And then I hear a scream. And then my daughter is screaming her head off because she got stung by a bee.
Oh.
I don't know if I told you the story of when she got a rose thorn stuck in her leg. Or her foot. And she went absolutely like conniption. And Drew, you've witnessed when Journey doesn't want to be moved and we're trying to move her.
I have?
Yes. It takes some inertia.
She has a strong will.
She has a strong will and a low center of gravity. So anyway, so she's freaking out. I'm like, oh God, okay, fine, whatever. How bad is it? So she goes inside and she's freaking out. She's like, this is why I hate summer. And so it was all very dramatic. And of course I'm like, okay, you know, no big deal. I'm looking on my phone real quick to see if there's any special magic tricks about bee stings as Grandma's going to find some sort of topical
what you do is you cut an onion in half and you pour some lemon juice and then you put it over the bee sting and you sing a little song and it'll magically elevate the venom out.
Yeah, no. So it was wash it really good. She already actually, it turns out it was a wasp, 100% a wasp. We found that little bastard. Man. And so she probably, there wasn't a stinger that went in her that stayed in her, or she knocked it away when she smacked her hand when the wasp stung her, and she wasn't having an allergic reaction. Although I was like, well, why don't we just take a Benadryl just in case? But it turns out my daughter doesn't take pills. So I was like, huh, well, sure hope you don't swell up, honey. But we put some ice on it. It was fine. And by the end of the day, thank goodness. By the end of the day, like an hour later. She was, it didn't even hurt anymore. And it, because at first, like it was right, like between her thumb and her index finger. And at first she had a hard time like bending her index finger because of where the sting was, but that was fine. And by the end of the day, she was saying, I can't believe my first sting was actually a wasp. But before we left Grandma's house, I went out and we were like looking to see where it happened. And sure enough, there's a limpy wasp in the grass. So I took a picture. That little bastard, and then I
squashed it.
I squashed it with a certain amount of joy. It was what they call at the Montessori school end of life cycle.
You should have had her squash it for some satisfaction.
Oh no! Oh no! Thing would have jumped up on her leg, stung her in the leg, and a whole bad deal.
Plus, if something hurts your child, you go take care of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's also, when was the last time anybody, either of you got stung by a bee or a wasp?
It's been not long enough.
I've only been stung once ever in my whole life.
Okay. Well, I wish I wish that it stays that way. But it is mm-hmm. a special kind of pain when you get, because I got stung a couple years ago. Twice, mm-hmm. I think I told you. Like, yeah. I actually stopped me in my tracks to say, mother truck, and then it stung me again. I'm like, okay, now I have to run. Because yeah. It was a amazing, like, laser. It felt like mm-hmm. like a laser beam hitting. It was amazingly sharp and painful. Just yes. briefly. And then it sore and throbs or whatever. But
yeah, that's why I carry an EpiPen.
Yeah. Nope, turns out, little ice, little soap and water, it's fine. She'll live to fight another day. But
I remember my sting was on the underside of my bicep, just like sort of between the bicep and the tricep on my upper arm.
Was it in a shirt or something?
No, I was wearing a short sleeve shirt and I was putting something, I think in the back of mom's car. So I was like leaning over and I think the bee was probably on the car and I maybe squished a little bit with my arm and it stung me. And that thing swelled up like a volcano.
Oh.
It was like hanging off my arm.
Ugh. Well, when I was 5, I think, I remember very distinctly, I was walking backward. That was an eventful year at the house on P Street. I remember walking backwards. Maybe I was younger than 5. I was walking backwards across the street from Wayne Anthony Ross's house to Grandma's house, and a big old bumblebee landed on my nose and stung me on my upper lip. And I was a screamy little kid, let me tell you.
That's rude.
Yeah, it was. So I learned the lesson of don't walk backwards across the street. This is also a place where I was playing in like a big pile of like topsoil, and somebody had thought enough to have a square, like a cut-off piece of 2x4 with a nail sticking out of it in that big thing. So I stepped on the nail and it went into the back of my foot. Anyway, lots of intrusive injuries at the house on P Street, but still, good times, good times.
No, see, I remember being in the basement of the rec room of our parents' house before they had installed all the carpet, and I embedded a big piece of metal in the center of my foot.
Oh, yeah.
We were playing around.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. We end up having a big old shootout. It's actually between Dimitri and Gustav in the hotel. So anyway, they retrieve Boy with Apple, blah, blah, blah. They find the second will, second copy of the second will, blah, blah, blah. So at this point, right, that's the main action, you know, and then Gustav presides over in Zero and Agatha's wedding, and the Society of the Cross Keys were witness. But then Zero is telling the story, you know, again, to Jude Law, and he's mentioning that, oh yeah, by the way, shortly thereafter, both his wife, Agatha, love of his life, and his first child died.
Yeah, that was a tragic turn.
Yeah.
Because of a silly disease.
Yeah. And then we have the nice little switch back to where Gustav, Zero, and Agatha on a train. Gustav finally answers the question Zero asked before about whether he was ever a lobby boy. And Gustav, who, by the way, he has inherited all of Madame D's stuff, so he's rich. And he says, yes, but that Zero was a much better lobby boy than he ever was. But yeah, so they're stopped again on the train by the similar officers who again question the papers. In this case, it's what Gustav's papers that don't match up. And he tries to use the pass that Hinkle gave him, but that pass doesn't have any weight anymore now that the tide of war has turned. And the man knocks out Zero, and Gustav is taken off the train and presumably killed, right?
Yes.
So again, it's pretty dark. And that's kind of where the movie ends, and it just kind of ties up. I mean, this whole thing is a story being told to us, or a story being read by a girl, narrated to the girl by Tom Wilkinson, acted by Jude Law, who is hearing a story from F. Murray Abraham as portrayed by Tony, whatever his name is. And the woman finishes the book in the cemetery, puts it away, and all those keys make sense.
They do.
The Society of the Keys.
Yeah, it's all hotel stuff, yeah. And thus ends the fable. It's got some rough edges at the end, but as Wes Anderson has stated, it's not a political movie, but, you know, you don't shy away from the bad stuff.
What's the moral?
Bang old chicks?
It's just a story of a flawed, but, story of true love. A story of a highly revered but flawed man in Gustav. A story of love and remembrance. A story of war-torn countries and old grand places that are no longer grand. Much like as we get older, we become less grand. And eventually fall into decay. know. It's a lot of pastels and a lot of drawing cut out pieces of paper, kind of like that little what's it called? The mechanism that takes you up the hill? Like the it's sort of the like chairlift? A tram. Yeah. They had a name for it.
Like a not a T bar, but
not the gondolas.
Oh, the name they had.
On tracks.
The name they had for in the movie?
Yes.
It's like a funicular or something,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes. A lot of that kind of stuff. A lot of finicky things, a lot of fiddly bits. Which, you know, I thought it was fine. I mean, I don't know if I want to watch it again anytime soon, but I thought the performances were over the top, but not any more than like a Coen Brothers movie. Like, Hail Caesar was perfectly interesting to watch, and it's no more ridiculous than this. Or less. Not as much singing in this movie.
Crossing Hail Caesar off the list.
Yeah. If you don't like, you won't like it.
Sounds like I need to add it to my list, though.
George Clooney.
I like George Clooney.
Channing Tatum. Scarlett Johansson. You know, the rest of the Coen Brothers people. John Turturro has to show up somewhere, right? George Clooney is not in much of it, though, so that's kind of a...
It's kind of a bait and switch.
A little bit, yeah. But anyway, no, I'd recommend Hail Caesar, but only as like a three-star movie, not as a like as a B movie. So, Brother Jay, any other notes, and what's your take?
Let's see, my notes. I was thrilled to see Tom Wilkinson in this movie. I noted that Zero got a Sorkin-like walk-and-talk interview from Gustav.
Yes, indeed. There. By the way, I think that's also a trademark of Wes Anderson. Royal Tenenbaums has the walk and talk too, right?
Does it? I don't remember. It might. I don't recall. I like the speech since apparently I've been chastised for dropping the F-bomb, but I will repeat this. It was a movie quote.
Who chastised you?
Somebody on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So...
Have we deleted him and banned him?
Yes. Okay. He was taken care of.
Okay.
So if you're listening, so sorry.
This podcast is listed as explicit.
Well, it was a different F-bomb. You'll understand here in a moment. But I like the fight at the reading of the will between the son.
I like that one too, actually.
You know, I thought I was supposed to be a fucking faggot. Well, you are, but you're bisexual. That made me laugh out loud. I just thought that was a great line. It was a great interplay. So it and they had some really good acting. Let's see. I like some of the subtle subservience this movie has, where Gustav, it says, "Oh, I'll write it up," and then he hands Zero the pad and pen, and has him write it up. So he also his advice is never become a candy ass. Which is, you know, pretty good advice.
Yeah, that was his prison advice.
Yeah. I liked the little Zero inscription from, you know, I love you from Z to A. That was pretty adorable.
Yeah, I think that tipped it over to Twee a little bit.
Yeah, but then the whole, did he just throw my cat out the window?
Oh, I love that.
I had forgotten that part of the movie, and I was taken aback, but I couldn't stop laughing, so.
It's a very Jeff Goldblum thing.
Well, and he deadpans it well, which he doesn't always, but he played it well enough that it made me, I actually laughed. Because normally, Goldblum, I can go either way. I can usually leave him more than I want to take him, so. But no, he was fine in this, so.
Okay, I'm going to tangent a little bit. I have heard from people who have encountered Goldblum. These are podcast hosts, not people I know. They're my virtual friends. that Goldblum is a freaking charming mother trucker.
I believe it.
He just Goldblums all over everybody, and it's magical. I guess it's a little bit by like being in the presence of Tom Cruise, where he gives you his full attention, and it's just something you don't really get. So he may actually float on a wave of whimsy.
He was one of my favorite parts of this movie.
If you were to grade this film?
I would give it a B+.
Fair enough.
It was. I thought it was a beautiful movie. It was gorgeous. The sets were crazy, cartoony, diorama like.
Yeah, I thought the sets were great. I mean, again, I mean, as soon as I figured out this was going to be a world of whimsy, I just thought, well, let's see where it goes. And I was, except for it jarred me. You know, all the violence did kind of jar me back into wondering what was going to come next. So I thought that was a good way to add tension. Brother Drew?
Yeah.
Was it worth it?
Do you think the character of Gustav was supposed to be likable? Like, were you supposed to like him in this movie?
I think you were supposed to appreciate his certain charms, but I liked the fact that he was not a superhero. He didn't save the day, although sometimes he did. And, like, just little things, like he got his ass kicked in prison. He tried to run from the cops, and not in a great way, or the soldiers. You know, sometimes when he tried to stick up for himself, both times on the train, he got his ass kicked.
But he still stood up.
Yeah. So he was a remarkable man, but not necessarily a heroic figure.
I hated him. And maybe that was one of the problems I had with this movie. Is like, I hated that character. So having to follow him around and having Zero
learn from him.
Yeah. Who I liked better sort of have to be subservient to him.
Zero worshipped him.
Yeah, it really annoyed me because I liked Zero, but I hated Gustav. I think the last time I hated Ralph Fiennes this much was when he was Amon Goot in Schindler's List. I even liked him better when he was Lord Voldemort.
Wow. So why did you hate him? What about it?
I don't know. Just his cockiness. Like, he wasn't cocky in a fun way. He gave sermons to his staff.
Oh, yeah. Dinner. No, he was a weirdo.
Yeah.
But like I said, he wasn't heroic. He was not a superhero. And Zero looked up to him because he was the master of his craft. But as a person, he had his own personal, obviously, issues. And that wasn't lost on Zero. I mean, Zero knew that he was betting the wealthy blondes.
Yeah, I didn't really dig his retirement strategy. None of it. I thought the whole Society of the Keys thing was really just tiresome at that point. Yeah, this was, maybe I was not in the mood for this type of movie, but I was having none of it. And I was trying to find things to like, but they just weren't there, and then it just dragged on and on and on, and by the end I did not care about what was going on with the plot anymore. I did not care. Like, the shootout, I think, was really beautifully framed and it looked good, and maybe I would have enjoyed it if I just had it on mute, but at that point I was so annoyed by the rest of the movie that I couldn't get any enjoyment out of it.
What would you recommend as an alternative? If you want something with some whimsy, but you can handle it, besides Paddington 2? Is Paddington 2
it? Yeah, that would be it. That movie is charming and lighthearted and whimsical and has a great prison sequence.
So, okay, two thumbs up for Paddington and Paddington 2. I assume you like Paddington just fine.
I did.
Okay. And two thumbs up for Grand Budapest Hotel, because I liked it.
I liked it.
I would recommend it if you want whimsy.
No, man.
That's where it's okay. That's where you part ways. So okay. So, sorry. Housekeeping. Housekeeping. Brother Jay, any housekeeping?
I do. We finally finished The Americans.
And maybe you guys can talk about that next week, but I won't be... Although I guess I have to edit it.
So. But no, I had to commiserate with because I was just, nobody at work is watching it. So I had nobody to talk with. And I was like, oh my God. And Jesse's like, we should watch it again. I'm like, no, I'm good. I don't need to watch it again. I'm good. Yeah,
no, I think we are two of like 14 people that have seen it.
Yeah. I'm amazed. I want to know more of the story, and I'm sad that it ended the way it did, but I understand. It had gone on, and it had gone on for a while, so. Mm-hmm. Other than that, do I have any other housekeeping? Let's see. It's been hotter than hell here. Air conditioning's working. Unfortunately, it's been running like 14 hours a day, so my electric bill is going to be super scary. Derek has the vents not quite calibrated, so my bathroom is like 62 degrees. Because really, I need air conditioning in my bathroom. So
that's some cold shit there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I may end up sleeping in the bathroom if this keeps up. But no, I can't complain, and the house is cool at night. So we'll see. We'll see how much the bill is next month. I actually used mathematics and calculated the meter read from the last month read until last week, which would have been a week in the cycle, and we'd already used.
Now I know why this appeals to Drew.
We'd already used half as much as we did the month before. We were only 8 days into the cycle, so. Yeah, bill's going to be ugly. Otherwise, boyfriend Jesse and I are going to be up in Federal Way the week after next, which is why I won't be why I will be unavailable on that Thursday. So, and then in a couple of weeks after that, the folks are going to be here, so that'll be fun. Deidre and her youngest son Reese, I guess her only son, but her youngest child Reese. We're here looking at colleges. So that wow. made me feel really old.
Well, we're all getting old. I'm telling you, I taught a class last week of people that... It's funny. I consider myself to be 35 years old.
I know.
So I consider if you're 35, I get you. Yeah, it turns out I am not 35 years old. I am almost 15 years older than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had to give some training to my... employees this week, and I was trying to explain some things to some people, and as I got halfway through it, I realized none of them had any reference to what I was talking about, because none of them worked for the county for the reference I was making. It's like, oh, I didn't realize they'd been here quite that long.
If your frame of reference does not include my ability to tickle your memories with cute stories about Barney Miller and Hong Kong Phooey.
Yeah, so that was fun.
We're just so looking forward to leaving town next week. I mean, there's a shit ton of stuff for us to do this weekend to get the house ready to have a house sitter come in here and deal with the pets. But other than that, so we'll be tired when we hit that plane, probably. But.
It's a lot of work to go on vacation, especially yeah. with children.
Yes. We're just so looking forward to not having to deal with work problems. It doesn't matter how the vacation goes. I mean, we could have, like, horrible things happen on the vacation, but you know what we won't have to worry about? Work.
Don't worry. It'll be there when you come back.
It will. Yeah, it'll be there. In fact, the nice thing is we're only going for a week. So when we get back, we still have another week of vacation, which is nice because that way we can decompress.
So nice.
Yeah. And it's also a week where there's no childcare available anyway. So we work we didn't work the timing very well on that whole before, after school, before summer, but we worked the after summer before school just fine. So
nice. Nailed it.
Anyway, so Drew, do you have housekeeping?
I have not housekeeping really, maybe a radical discussion point.
I didn't even. Okay, cool. We've gone from whimsy.
Beep.
Yeah, is this for the podcast?
Maybe. It's up to you.
I like it already.
Well, it's about the podcast.
Okay.
I've been listening to older episodes actually.
Of our podcast?
Of our podcast.
Sweet.
And I realized I think it's a better podcast when there's only two.
You think?
I do. I think. And maybe it's just because we've been doing it so long now, but the older episodes, when it was just two of us, there was more room for discussion. And it wasn't quite as formulaic. A lot more time for personal stories and reflections. And I kind of missed that about the current episodes.
So propose, make your proposal.
My proposal is that we rotate. And I'm not sure how it would quite work. I don't want to give up the three of us together because I really like it.
Well, I have a suggestion then, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to rotate, then we should probably go through the movies and pick the ones that one of us has seen already. Maybe we opt out or opt in, depending on the movie. If all of us haven't seen it, we should discuss it together. Or if it's very important to one of us, we should discuss it together. But we can rotate. You know, one week it's two of us, the next week it's the other two of us, then the week after that it's the other two of us, and then it's all three of us.
Yeah, I was thinking of something like that, so that, yeah.
So that at certain movies, though, obviously we want to be, there are certain movies we want to discuss together.
Mm-hmm.
They're kicking me off my own show.
Well, no, and I don't know if you guys even agree, so, So I think it's kind of a radical notion.
Oh, no, no. I think this is the thing we need to think about.
Yeah, for me, the balance is I enjoy the three of us getting together more. I just like that better, being able to see both of you every week. But I think the episodes are, if I'm trying to be sort of unbiased, I think the episodes were better when there was just two people, and that led to better discussions.
Well, we had to perform 33% more.
Yeah.
Well, and another advantage was it gave us something else to talk about. Like, oh, I can't believe you guys talked about that last week. I had a thought about that.
That's also true.
That's the other part is, if you guys are recording and I'm available, I know I'm going to feel left out.
Well, yeah, that'll be too.
I think it might be better. So I wanted to throw it out there.
I mean, as it turns out, I'll have the same amount of work every week, so that won't be an issue.
Yes, yes, you will.
Yeah.
Or the other option, may be that two of us are involved in the discussion. One of us is listening, as you will, live streaming, and making comments that are on our own, but that you can add in later so that there are reactions or I can't believe you missed this, or so we're still involved, but the discussion is really only between the two of us.
You mean like we'll all be three here like today?
Right. But I would stay muted and I would listen to you discuss it. And then
I think that'd be too hard.
I think so. Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think you could make it work because it would be almost like live streaming it.
No, and it might also be better to, because when we got three of us got back together, we could maybe rehash something if it was really bothering us that we missed out on.
We're certainly shy about our opinions.
Yeah, well, and actually there is an advantage because that way, like taking a week off wouldn't be a big deal. If we just rotated, you know, if basically we all took 1 week off a month, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it would amount to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for 4 weeks, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm game. I mean, that's cool. Yeah, we probably want to reorder our movies. But we can certainly give it a try.
These are just my thoughts on the quality of the episodes.
I don't disagree with you. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you're right.
Yeah, and we can't, from my perspective, I can't do two a week like we did in the beginning.
Oh, no, I'm not, which would be fun
if I had the time. If we were thinking about like what to do, like retirement wise, because I'm like 7 years away, which seems like not very long, right?
That's not very long.
I'm not so sure I could live off my retirement, but I could do a pretty good job. However, if the choice is going to find some lower paying job that I would have to do, or just staying at my current job, oh, I'd stay at my current job. I don't see your, this is the problem I'm sure Dad is facing. Like, yeah. If you have a fair amount of money coming in, you know, retiring, it means I would have to take probably, what, a 20% decrease. And I would still have all the time in the day to spend the money. And I have a child who would be nearing college age. So, you know, there's a whole thing about that. But thinking about retirement jobs, like what to do, like if you're going to, how would you fill your day? You know, thinking, well, shoot, what can I do to make money? Like the stained glass thing, I would love to get back into doing that. And that could actually turn into something that could make a few bucks here and there, only to supplement a retirement, not to be like a full-time job. But it would be creative and whatever. I cannot see making money doing a podcast, though. But I would have more time to do podcasts, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, unfortunately, it's sort of like blogging. I got into blogging at the same time that everybody in the world got into blogging. And we got into podcasting at the same time that everybody in the world is getting into podcasting. Now, that said, I think we're all a lot better at it than we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So interesting. Yeah. No, it's, yeah. I'll have to think more about it, but my gut reaction is sure.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys want, you know, go back and take a listen to some of the older episodes. I think you'll. At least I was surprised at how different they really were.
Okay, I've got a mission for you, though. Here's actually an actual project-type mission. If you go back and listen to the old episodes, if you can put time codes on interesting stories or, like, funny witticisms or something, like clips, to kind of reinvent to make our clip show...
Oh.
Okay. Because, you know, there's some silly turns of phrases that I like, but going through 260 episodes of a podcast is going to be time-consuming, especially if I have to write down stuff. But with all of us, if you happen to be listening anyway,
mm-hmm.
For any reason, yeah, if you can write down time codes, I can. It's easy to chop them up if I know where to do it.
Okay.
It's just going through, so.
The next time I get a wild hair, I'll make sure to make some notes.
Exactly. Of course, theoretically, this is stuff I could do on a plane.
Oh, right. Or you could just watch Terriers.
I will do that as well, yeah. Although, I don't know. Maybe the flights will be relatively short enough that I won't really have a whole lot of down, like, dead time.
You're flying from Anchorage to Seattle, and then Seattle's...
Anchorage to Seattle on the way there, Anchorage to Portland on the way back.
How does your daughter do on planes?
Well, I've never been there, but according to Kelly, she does just fine.
Okay. So maybe you will have some time then.
And we're traveling like in the mornings, so we get everywhere in the afternoon.
That's nice.
So it sort of takes away some of our day, but that way we get there with, you know, just after check-in time, so we don't have to wait around to check in someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And we leave, they actually pushed our flight back a little bit, so we were actually leaving like at 6 in the morning. And now we have to leave at 8 in the morning, which is a much better time to go to the airport at 6 than it is at 4 or whatever.
You know what else eats into your day? Cranky children.
Yeah, we're going to find out. We still have attitude things. As it turns out, we'll probably always have attitude things. And of course, as we found out, I have attitude things. I stayed in the house instead of going out and playing with my child. And actually did the dad thing of when I heard the screaming, I'm like, oh, God. Okay.
Walk it off.
Put on my... No, I mean, before she came inside or before I went down, I was like, here we go. I gotta put on my mask of normalcy.
You didn't burst out the front door and find Mom and go, what did you do?
No. I listened for a little bit, though, to figure out what was going on. Anyway. So I can't wait to see how, like walking 10 miles a day is going to do for all of our family. Since last year, I was actually walking quite a bit, trying to make weight for a plane. Now, this year, I did not walk a bit, and I'm now the weight of a plane. So it's all, you know, it all works out. Anyway, any other housekeeping besides that radical notion? Which actually, the more I think about it, the more interesting I think it is. It will change our movie picks, which may be good. because it may push us more into genre movie. And I think that kind of niche is a good thing. Know what I mean?
No.
Well, like if we talk about like Jason's more of a sci-fi fan and Drew's more of a horror fan. Let's see. I'm trying to think of movies that you both like that I'm not a big fan of. Well, Jason and I can talk about Wes Anderson movies. And Drew and I can talk about John Carpenter movies. Now, what can Jason and Drew talk to each other about?
I really hesitated to bring this up this week. It's been something I've been thinking about for a while. I didn't want you guys to think that it was just like
this movie put you over the edge.
Okay, yeah, final straw.
That's it.
No, I don't think that.
No. Interesting. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're always changing anyway, and we've certainly changed from day one, and I think we'll continue to change.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you.